Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up in today's program, a fledgling acting troupe gets its second season underway. We'll tell you about that. Also coming up, Politics Ohio with our very own Emily McCord. And last fall, NPR announced the Impact of Government Project, soliciting proposals from stations for a collaborative effort with NPR to examine the impact of what state government does from an outside-in approach. Today, we'll bring you the first of those reports up first. In most parts of Dayton, and definitely in Oakwood, Charlie Campbell and accordion are synonymous. Community Voices trainee Luke Dennis first interviewed Charlie Campbell to learn about the formation of the Oakwood Accordion Band, thinking the interview would become part of a larger piece about community music making. But it became immediately apparent to Luke that his story should be about Charlie.
Charlie Campbell has an irrepressible enthusiasm for just about everything.
I'm thrilled to be here, Luke. This is such a blast.
Meet Charlie Campbell.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel. We've got the blues on.
Charlie Campbell has lived in Dayton for nearly 40 years. Most of those years were spent as the president of Miami Jacobs Career College. It was a stressful, high-stakes job that took up every minute of his time. On a whim, while waiting in the Hauer Music Store, Charlie took an interest in an accordion that was for sale.
So I buy the accordion, and I said to Jerry Hauer, "Hey, are there any teachers here?" And he said, "Charlie, they're all dead, but I'll try to find one for you."
Meet Charlie's wife, Molly.
How do you feel about having accordion music in the house?
I don't love it.
In surveys, the accordion tends to occupy one of the top spots on a list of the world's most annoying instruments, alongside the bagpipes and the kazoo. But Charlie loves it.
How would you describe the sound of the accordion?
Okay. It is unbelievable. The tones are staggering in all this stuff. And I've got to put in the other reason that I love the accordion is it's a people instrument. And it, you know, it never made it with the hoity-poity people.
Charlie casually took accordion lessons in the late 90s, but his position at Miami Jacobs took up most of his attention. Then he had a stroke.
So then one day I was playing golf. I'm in a golf league. I passed out. I had had a major stroke. I couldn't talk. I couldn't communicate. I assumed I was talking just fine, but it was all blah, 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 blah. My wife took me to a speech therapist, and the speech therapist, I do remember this, said, "Okay, we got to test Charlie's communication." And she said, "All right, Charlie." And in the room where we were, there was a window, and there was a sunny day. And she said, "Okay, Charlie, where's the sky? Point to the sky." My brain was saying, "You know, that's a word, but what the heck is it?" And so then I just pointed to the floor.
The stroke affected more than just Charlie, of course. Here's his wife, Molly.
I was the caregiver, and I was the full-time therapist, and we were assigned homework, and, you know, he had to learn to speak again and read again and follow direct. He couldn't follow direct. He couldn't understand what was being said to him, and so that was all a full-time job. Yes, it was a very dark, horrible time.
As Charlie recovered from the stroke and started to reassemble his life, he realized he didn't want to reassemble it exactly as it was before. In fact, the stroke prompted him to break completely with the past.
I consciously said, and I said to my wife, "Hey, I don't want to go back doing what I did, and I'm going to sell the business, and I have no idea how we'll be able to live But I could care less. I just want to do something different because I figured, Luke, wait a minute. I could have been dead with that stroke.
What Charlie wanted to do turned out to be, if one had to fit it all under one umbrella, was to spread good news and good cheer. One way to do this was to develop a weekly email broadcast that shares the good news about what's happening in Dayton.
The Dayton Daily News, the TV, the radio, they're limited on what they're going to bother spreading the word about.
Is it also intentionally positive news? Is it in response to...
Of course, because most of the stuff you read on the newspaper or on television is about crummy things. And I don't understand why anybody cares about car accidents or potholes or all this stuff. Let's get the good news out. I listen to everybody. But if someone is grumping about something, I'm not interested in sharing the grumpy things that person is saying.
If something is happening and Charlie thinks it's remotely interesting, he'll include it, along with a link to the event. Categories include things going on, things that will be happening sometime, things kinda interesting, things very interesting. One hopes to always have their events listed in that last category. Charlie's personality comes through in every broadcast. It often begins with a strange word etymology that struck Charlie's fancy, or perhaps a link to his wife's blog. He always signs off with a flair. Charlie, I have two snow shovels. Need one? Campbell. Charlie, who loves the boogie-woogie, Campbell. And my personal favorite, in honor of Cinco de Mayo, Carlo, dos cervezas, por favor. Campbell. Another way to spread good news and good cheer was by forming the Oakwood Accordion Band.
And I was at some kind of a party, and I said to a lady, oh my gosh, I've got an accordion, I'm taking lessons. And she said, oh my gosh, mine's in the attic. And she said, I haven't played the accordion for years. So she then got her accordion out and dragged me over to her house, and I was a real beginner, and so she was playing with her accordion, having a blast, and then she said, I think so-and-so is also an accordion.
Charlie added members to the Oakwood Accordion Band, one accordion at a time. The band continued adding members and eventually was playing out 3 to 4 times a month, at nursing homes, in the lobby of a local performing arts center.
Charlie likes to have fun, and one of the performances at the Schuster Center, some of the band members tend to take it very seriously, and that he doesn't like it when they do. And so we were watching, and he didn't look like he was having fun, and Marion turned to me and said, my God, he's phoning it in! So anyway, he doesn't like to phone it in.
Charlie's curiosity is pushing his accordion playing in new directions. He loves the boogie-woogie, and travels to Cincinnati every week for a lesson with boogie-woogie piano legend Ricky Nye, who Charlie was delighted to learn also plays the accordion.
So it's so fascinating to me to hang around and to be with Ricky Nye, and I just keep learning stuff, and then I go down in the basement and practice, and my wife, she'll start pounding. Yeah, oh yeah, and she'll be upstairs, and then she'll say, really, I gotta go to the grocery store. I've heard this too much.
He's also starting a new group with two other accordionists he calls Two Good Guys and Me. Their mission? To play the dance music of the 50s and 60s and take it into retirement homes.
We're putting together a band on how to involve the senior citizens or the retirement communities, how to involve them picking out what they want to hear, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then we'll be performing it with them and with some dance people who will drag them out there to get them dancing. And some of those people we know will be in a wheelchair. There's a whole way to be having that person dance on the wheelchair. Yeah. And so I just think it'll be a fun time. We're going to have lyrics for those who want to sing along.
That's the future.
Yeah, that's the future.
I love it.
Charlie Campbell thinks it's great in Dayton. Skeptical? Give him 10 minutes and he'll have you thinking the same thing.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for talking with me.
I'm thrilled to be here, Luke. This is such a blast. So this is just... Now, Ricky said, yeah, this may not be a boogie-woogie, it's a blues, but I like the...
That was Luke Dennis's profile of Charlie Campbell. Luke produced that piece in WYSO's first Community Voices training program. Tune in tonight at 6 and again at 11 p.m. for more local stories by our Community Voices trainees. Destination DIY and WTF will be back next week. Tonight, it's a special hour of radio stories by, for, and about the Miami Valley. Free Shakespeare is back in action this summer. They hit a variety of stages last year and were well received, so they're doing it again with performances at the Yellow Springs Antioch Amphitheater, Wagerson Gardens Metro Park in July, and in August they'll perform at Newcomb Founders Park and at the University of Dayton's Art Street. We wanted to find out what's been happening for the acting troupe since last year. I caught up with Free Shakespeare founder Chris Shea at Wagerson as the group was getting ready for a run-through of their latest production, A Midsummer Night's Dream.
We had really positive feedback last year. It was pretty overwhelming. We had a lot of families come. We had quite a cross-generational audience. And just a lot of people were very gracious and thankful, particularly in Yellow Springs. They were very happy to have Shakespeare back there again.
And a lot of what took place last year actually led to some new partnerships this year?
Yeah. Being down at Art Street, we were basically neighbors with the Blue Sky Project. And Peter Benkendorf, who heads that up, and he also heads up a group called Involvement Advocacy. We've partnered with Involvement Advocacy. They're going to act as our fiscal agent so we can accept tax-deductible contributions. In the meantime, we're in the process of getting our own 501c3, but until we get that, we have their help. They're very helpful in just spreading the word. I personally am involved in Up Dayton, and so that partnership was just kind of a natural fit. They've asked me to come perform at some of their meetings, just kind of doing the street performing stuff and put it inside of a meeting. It's kind of fun. Any chance I feel to expose people to the language of Shakespeare is an opportunity that needs to be taken. There's still far too much mysticism and unattainableness about Shakespeare and his language and his works. And, you know, that's why our logo is a Shakespeare mugshot. It's, yeah, we do shows for free, but we do them in such a way that hopefully it's easier to follow for the audiences. It's more engaging with the audiences. We really want them to be a part of the show. They literally are our final collaborator. We can't do a show without an audience. And we're so grateful that people show up. We are so thankful that people have responded so positively to this.
Well, great. So what else is going on with the troupe? Tell me a little bit about the makeup of the performers.
Sure. We've got a really diverse cast this year. The age range spans from 21 to 78. And we have all levels of experience. We have people that have done... that have worked with a number of professional companies. We have one gentleman who it's his first time on stage ever. We have another gentleman who hasn't been on stage in 45 years. We have a couple of Wright State students involved. It's a magical group of people. The way this cast has come together and risen above the challenges that have been presented has really remarkable. I'm so thankful to have a group of people like that to collaborate with and to create this art that we bring to the community. It's It's a wonderful experience. I couldn't ask for more.
How canst thou thus, for shame, Titania, glance at my credit with Hippolyta, knowing I know thy love to Theseus?
These are the forgeries of jealousy. And never since the middle summer spring met we on hill, in dale, forest, or mead, by paved fountain, or by rushy brook, or in the beached margent of the sea, to dance our ringlets to the whistling wind. But with thy brawls thou hast disturbed our sport. Therefore the winds, piping to us in vain, as in revenge have sucked up from the sea contagious fogs, which falling in the land hath every pelting river made so proud that they have overborne their continents.
So what's after this run? Do you guys kind of split up, or do you start planning next year's performances?
After we're finished this summer, we actually have a busy fall. The October 7th, we're planning on doing a public reading of the complete works of William Shakespeare, unabridged. Not the 90-minute play, complete works abridged. We're going to read the whole canon, 37 plays, 154 sonnets, the other poems he wrote. I think it's going to take about a week straight through. It's going to be a fundraiser project for our company and for Relay for Life.
Wow, how's that going to be formatted?
I'm not sure yet. That's part of the fun. It's a logistical nightmare, but we'll make it work. Yeah, it's not rocket science. It's just reading out of a book, right?
Free Shakespeare founder Chris Shea. Tonight, Free Shakespeare performs at the Yellow Springs Antioch Amphitheater at 7 o'clock. Information about additional performances can be found at freeshakespeare.com.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the fifth week of middle summer. The observation of natural history, says Eliades Quintana, is a simple and powerful form of meditation. In it, we find that the chanting of katydids and crickets and watching the approach of August are no less magical than the songs of monks or the mantras of gurus. Here, in the fifth week of middle summer, the insect chorus of the night leads the meditation. I listen to the crickets and katydids then, and in the day I watch the history of July unravel, yellowing locust and buckeye leaves and browning garlic mustard, reddening Judas maples and Virginia creeper leaves, shiny spice bush, boxwood, greenbrier, and poison ivy berries, wild cherries darkening, osage, buckeye, and black walnut fruits heavy enough to drop in a storm. Mallow, Asiatic lilies, and daylilies disappear in the garden as white, red, and purple phlox unfold. Lizard's tail and wood nettle go to seed along the riverbanks. Blue weed, white vervain, motherwort, and white sweet clover end their seasons. Petals of the hobble bush darken. Parsnip heads, honewort pods, and sweet Sicily pods are dry enough to split and spill their seeds. Late summer's burdock and Jerusalem artichokes bloom now. Wild lettuce opens at 9 o'clock in the morning, facing the sun, closes by noon. Tall blue bellflowers, pale violet bouncing bets, gray coneflowers, and pink germander color the waysides. Water hemlock, Joe pieweed, and arrowhead blossom in the swamps. Round galls swell on the goldenrod. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the sixth week of middle summer. In the meantime, meditate to the mantras of the plants and the crickets and the katydids.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord. And today I'm joined by Bill Cohen. He's with our Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome.
Thank you.
A couple of Quinnipiac polls came out this week, and I want to start with Governor Kasich. Not the greatest news for him in this latest poll. What did it find?
Well, it found that his disapproval rating is sinking even more. Back in May, those who disapproved of him in office outweighed those who liked him by about 11%. Now his disapproval gap has widened to about 15 points. It appears to be mostly because people are upset about the new collective bargaining law that he backed, and they're upset about the new state budget.
And, of course, it became official this week that the referendum on the collective bargaining law will go on the November ballot. This week you sat down with a national union leader, and you reported that this campaign is going to have national implications. Can you tell me about that?
Well, sure. I mean, this is Ohio is kind of a flashpoint here. We have had similar disputes in Wisconsin and a few other states, but I think Ohio is one of the only states, perhaps the only one, where the voters are actually going to get the final say on whether to pass or kill a collective bargaining law, a new change that weakens considerably the power of unions at the negotiating table. And so you're going to see national unions and liberal groups from across the country pouring money and manpower in, perhaps millions of dollars worth, to try to convince Ohioans to get rid of the law. You're going to see conservatives and Republican and business groups perhaps doing the same thing on the other side, trying to pump in money and manpower, trying to get people to say, no, let's keep this law here. Because, of course, Ohio is a kind of a swing state, and a lot of people figure whatever happens in Ohio may spread to other states. So these national groups and activists think they have a lot at stake depending on what happens in Ohio.
Let's go back to some of the polls that came out. Another Quinnipiac poll took a look at President Obama, and there was some mixed news there. So what happened?
Well, it shows that people are pretty lukewarm in Ohio about Obama, virtually split down the middle people are, and they've been that way for several months. When you ask people, should he be reelected, it's virtually an even split. But then when you say, okay, well, let's match Obama up against several Republicans, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry and Mitt Romney and Sarah Palin, well, Obama beats all of them. He only beats Romney by about 4 points, but the others he beats by double digits.
Now, is this significant, or do we still have enough time for Ohioans to really form different opinions about the Republican challengers?
Oh, we've got plenty of time, more than a year now. Remember what happened a few years ago when the early polls were showing that Rudy Giuliani was definitely going to be the Republican nominee and that Hillary Clinton was definitely going to be the Democratic nominee. That went on for months and months. The polls kept showing that over and over. Everybody assumed they would be the nominees, and it wound up those polls were wrong, at least, or I guess it's more accurate to say, since those were snapshots in time, only snapshots in time. It wasn't so much that the polls were wrong, but the American people changed their minds and nominated two other candidates.
Another Quinnipiac poll took kind of a gauge of how Ohioans feel about the new health care law. And what were the findings there?
Well, very kind of conflicting results in a way. First, the pollsters asked people, look, the new federal health care law requires that virtually everybody buy health insurance or else pay a fine. What do you think of that? Do you support or oppose it? And by more than a 2-to-1 margin, Ohioans said they oppose it, 67% to 29%. 10 seconds later, the pollsters asked the very same people, okay, you say in general you don't like the mandate. Do you favor or oppose an amendment to exempt Ohioans from that mandate? You might think that by a 2-to-1 margin, Ohioans would say yes, they back the idea of exempting Ohioans from it. But instead, Ohioans were virtually split down the middle. 48% said they support the exemption, 45% say they oppose. That's a virtual tie, very similar to the margin of error in the poll itself. So the pollsters didn't go on and ask a third question, which I would have loved to have them ask, which is, well, why are you giving somewhat conflicting answers here to these two questions? I'd love to know the answer as to why. And, of course, the answer would give a lot of pointers to both sides in this upcoming campaign on the kind of TV ads they should run, what their messages should be.
I've been speaking with Bill Cohen. He's with the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. As you just heard, Senate Bill 5 will indeed go to the ballot box in November. No matter what the result of that vote is, the new law is already having an impact. Efforts to reform education in Ohio aren't sitting well with a lot of teachers whose performance will now be evaluated. Though some of those changes are months or even years away, they're having an effect now, including an exodus of older teachers from the classroom. For State Impact Ohio, a new education reporting collaborative of NPR and Ohio Public Radio stations, Ida Liavskovsky has more.
Sally Schuler's garage is full of homemade board games, posters on how to bake chocolate crumble cookies, poems about snails and cars.
Here's a little bit on war, Adam Schultz, redheaded kid. That was back in 1983.
Just like that, she remembers a middle school student she hasn't seen in nearly 30 years. Schuler is retiring after 32 years of teaching in Olmsted Falls, southwest of Cleveland.
I didn't want to do it, but I did.
Schuler says that because of proposed changes to the teacher pension system, it makes no financial sense for her to keep working. Those changes would take away incentives to keep teachers in the classroom for at least 35 years and delay cost of living adjustments for the first 5 years of retirement. None of those proposals is on the books yet. But Schuler has done the math, and in retirement, she'll be making
as much as, or nearly as much as, I did teaching.
Add to that the pay freeze and changes in benefits in the 3-year contract her union just signed.
We had been paying 10% of our insurance premiums, but then that was increased to 15%. But the trade-off was locking in a contract with language to protect teachers.
But for all the financial calculations, Schuler says emotion is also pushing her to get out of the classroom now. She looks at a picture of her sixth grade class in Cleveland schools back in 1966.
I'm right here, the geeky looking kid.
She says back then, education had value for more than just the geeks.
School was important to parents. Today, parents don't feel that same.
And that's not the only problem.
Education has become so politically connected with the voter. We tend to please the voter more than do what's right for the child.
So Schuler is leaving, and she isn't alone. The state teacher's retirement system says the monthly average of retirement applications has gone up by more than 11% since last year. The pension fund doesn't ask why, but to Pam Hummer, it's clear.
When did we become the bad guys in this? And that just kind of demoralizes you after a while, and you kind of say, okay, I've had enough.
She's retiring after 35 years with Cleveland Schools, driven out, she says, by the angry rhetoric in the State House and elsewhere about overpaid, underperforming teachers.
And not that I'm going to go quietly into the sunset. What it does is leave more time for me to be politically active.
Politically active to work against one of the most heated education changes, Senate Bill 5. The bill would severely curtail collective bargaining for all public employees, cops, firefighters, trash collectors, as well as teachers. Lawmakers passed it, and the governor signed it into law this spring. The bill, which forbids pay raises and layoffs based on seniority, is already having an effect. For one thing, parts of it are incorporated into the state budget. For another, teachers' unions can't be sure they'll be able to overturn it in the fall. So, according to the Ohio School Boards Association, more than 3 times as many unions have signed contracts this year as last. School Boards Van Keating says many of those include pay and benefit concessions.
It's a rather unprecedented time frame, at least for school negotiations, to have this many freezes.
The unions say they recognize Ohio's new state budget is slashing funds for local schools, and they're doing their part to help. But Matt Mayer of the conservative Buckeye Institute says that's not enough.
If we don't do a base pay reduction, you're going to have to raise taxes in order to afford the ever-increasing base pay that's going to go up and up and up.
He insists he's not picking on teachers.
Teachers do a great job in Ohio, and we value them. We just can't afford the kind of ever-increasing packages that have been being paid over the last 2 decades.
But retiring teacher Pam Hummer says she doesn't feel very valued. She takes comfort, though, in the thought that she's leaving room for young, talented teachers in the classroom.
I look at it as an opportunity for another teacher to not be laid off, for a younger teacher who needs the job to have the job.
But that also means losing some experienced, dedicated teachers who have honed their craft for years. For State Impact Ohio, I'm Ida Lieskovsky.
State Impact Ohio is an education reporting collaboration of NPR and Ohio Public Radio stations WCPN, WKSU, and WOSU. That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. WYSO is a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Don't forget, our Community Voices special airs tonight at 6 and again at 11. Up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.